So then you really didn't get to support Shirley Chisholm that night that she spoke at all?
Well, I had met Shirley, after I came back from picking up the 12 tickets that I finally did get. I had an opportunity to speak with Shirley until 6 o'clock. And, I didn't know where the tickets were, but I told her that we would be there if we had to walk through the door, And she was really nervous, and a couple of things had happened is that people that were going to nominate her that night had decided they weren't going to do it. And she was really upset and crying, and I thought to myself, my God, this is what they do to women, and the only woman that's running, they aren't even giving her a chance. And so Abernathy did introduce her, and they got some other reverend to do it. But, I really, really truly felt disgusted and very upset over what they had done to this woman. And I don't really know how she took it that long. And she belongs to the National Women Political Caucus. She's on the executive board, and she was one of the original founders.
Do you know why the original people that were going to introduce her decided not to?
Well, they had decided to go with the person, the favorite, which was McGovern. Everybody, it was in the atmosphere that McGovern was going to win. And so people started changing there. I sort of felt, if you're going to change, it's a terrible time to do it, a half hour before you're going to nominate her.
Could you hear her that night, seated where you were?
Could barely hear her. And we couldn't see her, except that they had this television box up on the wall, and the television box was so small that we could hardly see that. Except that when she came on, there were 20 of us, and some of the other people that were down on the floor, that were Chisholm people, came up with us so that we could make a lot more noise, And so when she came on, great big butcher paper, and one of the girls had written on there, Chisholm for president, and another black woman, Alla May, who ran for city council this last time around in Los Angeles, got this song going, and we got all the people up in the stands to even sing it. What the world need now is love, sweet love. Chisholm is the only one. We had everybody singing that, So I think she felt, a lot better.
But you weren't able to go down on the floor?
No.
I guess it was patrolled or policed.
Yeah, it was. It was policed. And, gee, where we were at, I wish you could have seen this. It was like being in Yankee Stadium and being right at the top seat. That's where we were. And we really felt bad about it. I can remember going home that night, and we went to Chisholm's door, and she had police. They were policing her all over where she went. And we started singing We Shall Overcome, and she came out and just teared her running down her face, and she said, the 12 of you stayed with me, and everybody else just dropped out, she says, and it was good to know that at least 12 people were with me.
So actually, you were only able to really participate that first night when you were allowed to sit on the main floor.
Yeah, we participated that first night, and then after that, we were able to do lobbying. I don't remember sleeping more than 4 hours at the convention. There were things that we wanted the McGovern people, once we knew that he was the nomination or going to be, I did a lot of lobbying.
Could you lobby on the floor?
Yeah, I got somebody's press pass and went onto the floor several times. And if I didn't have that, I'd get some other delegate's pass and I'd, ask them if I could use it. So I think there were 4 of us that got onto the floor from our delegation to do lobbying. And I was trying to think of the issues. And by the way, when the first night when they were voting on the abortion, and they were voting on the issues for the president, we were able to do a lot of lobbying just all over. And Chisholm told us before we went, she says, you will notice that other candidates, their spokesperson of their delegation will stand up and vote for the entire delegation and won't ask the opinions of each other. She says, but I want you to know that each one of you are an individual and you know what your communities want. So you vote the way you want and don't vote the way that I would ever tell you to do. So whenever we gave our vote that first night at the convention, I can remember a certain party running up and saying, McGovern candidates, when I put my fingers up in the air, you all vote yes. And when I put my fingers down, you all vote no. You know, and he came over to me, he says, now you got that right, Chisholm delegates? And I says, no, I don't. I said, each one of us has our own paper. And every time that something comes up, I said, I'm going to take a tally, and then I'll tell you how we go. And he became very upset. He says, no, 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 that isn't the way the party wants you to do, you know. And I said, that's the way we go. I said, that's what Chisholm told us we could do, and that's what we're going to do. And so then the McCarthy people went with us, and then the Humphrey people, and they were tallying votes. And the McGovern people, you know, the first, I guess, 3 or 4 votes, they were doing it. But they caught themselves, particularly, I think, the women in the caucus. I went up to them and I said, hey, you guys going to vote as a total group? I said, you don't have any feelings? What were you doing at all the caucus meetings and, you know, talking about rights of this and rights of that? I said, you come here and you're a follower. Mm-hmm. You've lost your principles. So about after the third vote, they started saying, hey, I vote no, you know, or I want, yeah, you know. And so it was all interesting.
Well, it sounds like it. It's been quite an experience. This is kind of getting off the subject, but I wanted to get this straight. You were staying in the hotel with the National Women's Political Caucus was meeting.
Yes.
So then you weren't in the same place where the California McGovern delegates were.
No, they were in another hotel about 6 miles from our hotel. And we were in a hotel where the Women's Political Caucus was at, where Humphrey was at. We had the top fourth floor, I guess it was, and then Humphrey had the rest of the hotel. But each candidate had their own hotel.
I see. Were there any other women from this area that were a Chisholm delegate?
From San Diego?
San Diego.
No, I was the only one. But the rest of them either were from Los Angeles and San Francisco. And we had to provide for our own transportation. Everything that we did was out of our own pocket. You know, if you wanted to participate, other candidates provided tickets and chartered flights and paid half the hotel bills for their delegation. But ours was a poor delegation, and so we had to put out our own money.
Mm-hmm. Were many of the women delegates members of the Women's Caucus?
As far as the Chisholm people were, most of them were in the Women's Political Caucus, and now most of them were.
Could you make a guess as far as the McGovern delegates? At least from this area.
From San Diego area?
Do they belong to the Women's Caucus?
The only one I can think of is Janice Crooks, who was belonged to the Women's Political Caucus. And
you mentioned that Janice Crooks was a member of the caucus and also attended the convention. Do any other people come to mind in this area?
They belong to the caucus that were a couple of. You know, no. I know that, you know, women participated in all of them, but when it came down to choosing the delegates, there had to be so many percentages of this and that, and so I think that there are very few of the women in San Diego that actually got to go. Oh, I know. There was Estelle Chacon. She belongs to NOW, the National Organization of Women, and the National Women's Political Caucus. And she was a Chicana. Terrific woman. And she got to go.
I met her. She has a lot of exuberance and warmth. She's a good person. Okay, let's get back to the convention and talking about specifically what the Women's Caucus did. What were their priorities? What were they basically concerned with getting done at the convention?
The abortion. As far as you know, as I can remember, and as far as what they were pushing was the abortion issue, and that it would be passed, and that the person that was going to be the president would definitely appoint a woman to the cabinet. Those were the two main specific purposes. And to do lobbying on any other issues that would benefit women. And to contact other women, get names and addresses from all over the United States, because women that were there would eventually become politically involved. So, but the main thing was getting the abortion issue passed, and that the president, the nomination, presidential nominee, would appoint a woman to the cabinet.
What tactics did they adopt to carry out those?
Well, I remember that we were all given literature to pass out on the issue of abortion. We were to do lobbying with every delegation we could meet. And we were to particularly lobby with the spokespersons of each delegation.
And were all of these tactics discussed in a meeting prior to the convention?
That was done at the issues.
The issues.
Yeah. And I remember that, you know, everything they handed us had that abortion on the top, support, you know, and support for a cabinet position. I can remember the bottoms and tops of the, and if I were to dig up some of the things that I have, you know, it was a constant reminder.
Did you discuss the parliamentary procedure at all?
Yeah, we did at one of the meetings, and we were giving a sheet. That's one of the...
What were we talking about before you know?
About parliamentary procedures.
Right.
You know, I can remember them being discussed, and at each meeting, you know, like if a woman stood up and say, "Hey, you know, I want the floor," I can remember Sibella that was running the meetings, you know, banging on the table and saying, "Now, wait a minute, you have the parliamentary procedures, and that's how we're running this meeting. You have to learn to participate," you know, and the person would sit down, you know. And if someone stood up and said, "Yeah, I move that we," and she'd bang again, and she'd say, "Now, why don't you read your parliamentary procedures so that you know how to stand up and make a motion?" You know, so it was a constant type of training. And I guess I can remember, too, that at the meeting in Washington, the Women's Political Caucus saying that we would be learning at the convention and that we should take note of the training that we were actually having there. And the parliamentary procedures were going to be the most important thing, so that when we came back from Washington and went home, we should study them as much as possible and buy a Robert's Rules of Order.
Did you feel a lot of pressure put upon you as a candidate by the National Women's Political Caucus?
No, because when I told them I was going to run, that I was not going to run on as a woman. I was going to run as a person, and that I wasn't going to come out as a feminist. That in my district, I had analyzed the district, and I wasn't going to be allowed to come out on abortion. But if asked a question in a talk or somewhere, I would answer it on, you know, how I felt about it.
Did you feel hostility between the different women delegates, like Chisholm delegates and McGovern delegates, Humphrey delegates, that belonged to the caucus? Was there hostility?
Particularly one that I won't mention, that is very well known in the caucus and is from California, put a heck of a lot of pressure on me and took me aside and scolded me like a mother-daughter type thing, you know, kind of shook me. I think that, you know, she tried to put a lot of pressure on me, and every time she saw me during those 5 days, it was that constant type thing, you know, what had I done supporting Miss Chisholm and not, you know, McGovern. And she would remind me every time we were at some meeting. I went to the Black Caucus. I went to the Chicano Caucus. I went to the Women's Caucus. And everywhere that I went, I'd run into her, and she would just...
Do you think she was putting the same kind of pressure on the other Chisholm delegates?
I think she tried, but I think that one of them was Artie Scott. She tried to put pressure on her, and Artie told her, listen, don't come around and give me none of that. You know, and I'm not that type of person.
You don't come across or come
that's
on that strong.
I just can't.
Could you tell me the woman's name, or does it, is it?
Well, she's not from San Diego. She's the president of the Women's Political Caucus in Los Angeles. Her name is Mary Clark.
And you felt pressure from her to perform for McGovern?
Or? Yes, to perform for McGovern. And that I was sort of letting the caucus down because the caucus had really come out in support of McGovern. I guess they had endorsed McGovern. And
the caucus had endorsed McGovern?
Yes. And afterwards the caucus came out in a newsletter saying, you know, we made a mistake. We endorsed McGovern when we actually should have endorsed Shirley Chisholm. You know, as I say, there was so much negotiations going on, so much tension. And the first time that women participated in a convention, that the women were used, you know. I have a poem, if I could read it to you, about what happened at the convention.
Could you?
Let me get it. I wrote a poem in frustration when I came back from the convention. It says, "For President I Run." The announcement was made, "For President I Run." Men, women, and youth astonished all. The first in history, where would she go? From state to state, always on the issue. No compromise, unbought and unbossed. The youth, they saw the truth was there, and the women knew hope was near. The men felt that all could be represented, and senior citizens felt all could be raised. The time came near, and oh God, what a threat. The machine began to work. The rumor is the best. Where is their weakness? The women. Let's run, talk, and spread. Remember, unity is the word. Use minorities, both women and men, tokens everywhere, and threaten all you can. Now we've won Democrats, Republicans are next. Unity is the word. Promise all. Where is their weakness? The women. Because I felt, and I guess the women, I felt it at the convention that the women were being used, you know, and I told them, and I kept telling everybody, and I thought, gee, you know, maybe it's me. But three
How
months
were
later,
used?
How were they used? Well, number one, they pushed and support McGovern, who was a man, who said that I will support issues of women, the abortion thing. And then later on they're coming out and saying, well, we're going to have to calm it down, and we're not going to be able to pass this abortion ruling issue because we want McGovern to win. And so, you know, here were all these women from various caucuses on various delegations voting no on the abortion, you know. And now I understand, now after I've been involved in, you know, I understand that there has to be compromises for a candidate to win. But at that time, you know, I was so green and raw that I just, I was very hurt. And, you know, I think that this happens every day in politics, and politics has become not dishonest, it's the way that you say it. And so I feel that, you know, honest politics has to come back in being honest, so that when people say, that's the candidate I believe in, and I believe in that candidate because he or she is honest, and they've said, I believe in abortion, you know, and when you elect me, I want you to know that. Not that after I'm elected, I'm going to come out and say, now I'm passing laws on abortion. You know, people have a right to know. I think politicians get in without people really knowing what they're like. And I think that that's the difference between the men and the women candidates right now in San Diego, and that's maybe why women aren't winning. But I think that the women candidates have been very honest and open to the public. And they said, look, this is what I believe in, this is how I stand, and this is what I'm going to do for you.
Do you think the women did this at the convention?
I think on the abortion issue, you know, when they're talking about it, yes, but when they got back to their delegations and voted, they voted it down.
So they weren't being honest?
No. They were being used. They didn't realize it till after 3 months afterwards, and all these articles came out in our newsletters and the caucuses from Los Angeles, from Sacramento, from Texas, and then the one that came from National, you know, and said, gee, we made a mistake, you know, but that's okay. You know, that was our first step. It wasn't even our first step. We were at the process of intercourse at that time, you know. So, next time, you know, I'm sure that we're going to do a lot better, and women are going to be a lot more alert about being used.
Hopefully,
yeah.
What women were involved with, more publicly involved with it, trying to get some of these issues across to the delegates and to the presidential?
Well, as far as I could see, all the women were, you know, until it came time to vote. I mean, everybody was going like Mary Clark. She was just hitting all the delegations. I myself was doing it. Estelle Chacon was doing it. Gloria Steinem was doing it. Bella Abzug was doing it. Shirley Chisholm was talking about it on the podium when she was nominated, you know. Who else? Jill Ruckelhaus herself was, you know.
At the Democratic convention?
No, at the Republican.
Was there any male involvement with these women's issues at the convention? Do you recall any men supporting publicly abortion or equal rights men, child care?
Well, McGovern told us that he was, you know, openly at the first meeting when we met him, he was. And I guess it was that the night before he was nominated that he asked everyone to cool it. He was the only candidate. That's why the Women's Caucus supported him, because he came out publicly before his nomination. And then just after the nomination and the convention had dissolved and everything, then they started cooling all of this and saying, you know, you can't play it up.
What about men other than presidential candidates?
Sure, Ernie Mason, the guy that was coordinating the San Diego delegation for McGovern, was for it. There were young men like Harlan Leal, who was a Mexican-American, very liberal, was supporting him. There were blacks also, men I'm talking about.
Could you spell that man's name, Harlan?
H-A-R-L-E-N.
And that's his last name?
Yes.
Okay.
And Leal is L-E-A-L.
Okay. Who did you perceive as the leaders of the Women's Caucus?
At the convention?
Mm-hmm.
Gloria Steinem, Bella Abzug, Sissy Farenthal, who's now the chairwoman of the National Women's Caucus. There was a black woman, a Walker, an attorney from Florida. Unfortunately, she was an attorney, but her parliamentary procedures were not too good.
Hmm.
And so she was having difficult times. I'd say Mary Clark. She has a lot of influence. She's able to travel around quite a lot. She has some businesses of her own, so she is known all over, I'd say Washington, Chicago, because she does a lot of traveling. Mm-hmm. So Mary Clark.
Then these were the women that were speaking out at the caucus meeting?
Yeah, they were the women that were up on the platform, I guess, running off the issues. Then there was this two staff members, I was trying to think of her name, Diane, who was really sharp on issues. And she was the one that was providing the materials and writing up a lot of the stuff that was going on. And as I say, they weren't sleeping either. The office was open 24 hours a day. They were constantly sitting down writing new things to be handed out. And,
some women that I've been talking to complain about the communication between the leaders, the women that you just mentioned, and the different state women's caucuses. There wasn't enough interaction. They didn't find out when the meetings were. There wasn't transportation to the hotel where the meetings were. I don't think you probably had this problem, but did you hear about this?
I wanted to tell you first that when the women went to the convention, the National Women's Political Caucus went, they were in debt, I don't know how many thousands of dollars already. So they had no money for transportation. They had no money for running off or mimeographing things. They had to do their own lobbying to get so-and-so to loan them their machine to run off things. They didn't have paper, to supply the whole delegations. So what they were doing was, using everybody like everybody else was using everybody else. And they didn't have transportation to that to our hotel. But I must say that the McGovern caucus women were there because McGovern provided transportation for them. Then, knowing about the meetings, that was another hassle. That if you weren't a mover and a talker, you wouldn't know where any meetings was going on because everything was a big secret.
Why was that?
Well, everybody was trying to hold everybody back, so that their candidate could, win. The main purpose of the convention was...
Didn't want them to know too much, is that it?
No, too much about the lobbying that was going on, say, the caucus, or say, the Chicano, or the blacks, or the youth caucus, or the Anglo caucus, Everybody was having their own caucuses. I never saw so many caucuses in all my life. And these meetings were taking place, and if you weren't... constantly going around and talking to people, you wouldn't know that there were meetings. There were a lot of times bulletins put up and people ripping them off because they wanted to hold on to that thing to remember where it was going to be at. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, I think I found out about the youth caucus meeting about 4 o'clock in the morning. And they said, hey, the meeting's going to be at 7, Or, like the women's caucus, nobody came and said, we're going to have this meeting at such and such a time, Margaret. Because, here I was a Chisholm delegate. But, I'd find out.
So, would you say that it was up to the delegates themselves to find out
these
things?
That's right. That's what it's about.
Was this because the leaders themselves didn't want the people there? Or, I'm trying to understand why the communication between the delegates...
Because all the delegates were at different hotels, that's one, at various hotels. And I think it was the third day that we did get a list of all the women that belong in the caucuses that were in the various delegations and what rooms they were in. Mm-hmm. That was the third day. That was like, the nomination comes tonight.
Yeah.
That's when we got the list. And what happened was, I think it was because of the lack of funds that the caucus had. I mean, no funds, When it should have been done before. And they figured, well, we'll get there, do our lobbying, and so will give us paper for this. Mm-hmm.
Because I perceive that as a real problem. If the masses, the people don't know what's happening, then the work's not going to get done. And the leaders can talk among themselves.
Yeah, and I think that there must have been, power plays, too. I can remember the two staff members that I'm talking about. And the only good one that I felt was a good, honest staff member in the caucus was Jane McMichael. And the other two I felt...
particularly one of them, who was the top directress of the caucus at that time, paid staff members.
What was her name?
Her name was Diane. I don't remember her last name. I felt she held this as her power base, you know, and was using the caucus for her own, you know, power. And she was the one that was controlling all of this. You know? So, I think that they...
What did these women do, the staff members?
Staff members collected the issues on where the candidates stood and sort of did a resume type thing on each of the candidates when they finally got to the convention. As I say, they made up this list. They did the lobbying to get this paper. They did the running off and writings of the issues that the women were concerned with that we were going to hand to all the delegates. They organized the different various meeting places where we met. Like every day we couldn't meet in the hotel. And they had to pay for a meeting room in the hotels. And then in Florida, it's very, very expensive. So they had to hustle up money.
And actually, it's these staff members that did the organization rather than the leaders, Gloria Steinem, Bella Abzug.
Right.
Could you tell me your impressions of some of these leaders? What do you think of them?
Wow.
Well, let's just start with Gloria Steinem.
Well, I like Gloria personally. I think she's a good, warm person. And I think that she's concerned with all women, you know. And as I say, you know, she came down. In fact, she was here twice to help me. And, I don't feel that she feels discriminated that, you know, one black or one Chicana, that we're all the same, that she's willing to work to help all women get elected. Some people have said she's made this power play and that power play. I haven't seen her make any power plays, you know, and as I say, I've seen her here in San Diego several times, and I've been in Washington with her and in New York, and I think that she's a fair person. I like her very much, and I think that she'd work to help.
What about Bella Abzug?
I worked with Bella in her campaign for a couple months, I guess. She's a very, very aggressive woman, and very temperamental, and very outspoken, and tells you how she feels about things. And she doesn't care who in the heck you are. And sometimes she hurts people. But 2 hours later, she'll cry by herself. And it's hard for her to apologize, but she does try to apologize. And she does hurt a lot of people and expresses her opinion anywhere. Like I can remember on the streets, you know, going out there and one guy gave her the finger, you know, as she was going by and she says, "Up yours too, Buster," you know. And I kind of looked, you know, here's in the middle of, you know, of Broadway and 42nd Street. I mean, you know, one of the big plush places, you know, these guys. And she's got this crowd around her. And, you know, she doesn't feel embarrassed to do it, you know. And, then another time, the New York Times had come out opposing her, had supported Ryan, the candidate, was running against her. And she says, she called me Mary, and she said, "Mary! Get over here," she says. "I'm going to take you to the New York Times, and I'm going to teach you how to talk to editors." You know, and I was just shaking. I mean, she scares you.
Mm-hmm.
So we get over there, you know, and Bella doesn't smoke, and I smoke, you know. And, she had her this purse with this long handle, man. She always used to, you know, it was like a weapon, you know. I'd look at it and say, "Why don't you ever let anyone have it with her?" So we got in there, you know, and she just walks right through a secretary, right through everybody, and I'm standing back there, you know, and she says, "Get over here! If you're going to learn anything," you know, and I went in with her. And she tells the guy, "What the hell," she says, "you're trying to pull around here?" She says, "I'm the congresswoman," you know, and very, wow. And the next thing you know, she says, "Give me a cigarette, Castro!"
And I hand her a cigarette, you know, and pretty soon I see her grabbing her purse, you know, let this guy have it, you know, and the guy that's been working in campaigns with her all ever since she's ran says, Bella! She catches herself, you know, she sits down and she says, now let's talk this over with, real calmly, you know. And she's a very, very forceful woman.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, but she's really great. She really is. I can remember sitting in one of the automats with her, you know, and she's telling me, you know, Castro, you have to do a lot to help your women, she says, because they're a hell of a way, long ways back. She says, and they've got to climb a hill, you know, this type of thing. And she said, you've got to go home. She says, that's why we have you here, to learn as much as you can. And go back and encourage those women to get involved and start speaking out. And, you know, real sincere, you know, like I almost wanted to cry, you know. Mm-hmm. Here she was, you know, could hear one minute being so aggressive and boastful, and the next minute, you know, sitting me down and trying to encourage me to go on. And I like her. I get letters from her now, you know, ask me, how in the hell are you doing, you know. And, she's a nice person.
What about Sissy Ferranco?
Sissy's a very intelligent woman, very intelligent, and I'd say that she knows how to move around in politics and how to get people to do things. She's not a real boastful person. She's an aggressive person, but in a quiet manner, and is not loud, but lets people know that this is the way it's going to be. I didn't feel like Sissy was encouraging minority women, you know, like we were all just one, you know. And I think I had mentioned to her once about I sure would like to see her at least stress somewhere or mention somewhere that was important, that Mexican-American women, and I wanted to say Mexican-American women should start becoming active, you know, sort of something of encouragement. And she said, you know, she says, we're all the same, we're all striving for the same thing, and let's don't get into this radical thing. You know, about the Chicano this and that. And I said, I don't, myself have never been in it. And I feel that the only way we're going to, as women, get anywhere is that Chicanas belong to it, that Blacks belong to it, that Filipinos, Anglo women belong to it. And that if it so happens that the Anglo women are making it, having congresswomen, senators, then they ought to start saying, you know, I'm not going to be selfish with this pie. I want to help them, encourage them to get up here too, so that we're all representative. It's, you know, the men have left the women out, and they've left the minorities out too. The women have to be different. That's what the women's movement is about. And we don't want to fall into the same, you know, category as the men have put us in. Mm-hmm. And we want to be equal. When we talk about equal, okay, you know. And so that's what I wanted her to do, and I felt kind of like you know, Sissy wasn't ready for that, or she didn't understand it, or anyhow, she just sort of cut me off, you know. And I've written letters back, even now, to talk about her and things like this. And I am right now very much disgusted with the women's movement because of the lack of participation of minority women in the caucus. Fortunately, at the Texas Convention, there was a resolution passed with very, very much opposition, but it was passed that Chicanas would be allowed to form Chicana women political caucuses and Black political caucuses. You know, like, I'm not really all for that, but if that's what people in Texas need to do, you know, I don't oppose it.
And there was a lot of friction concerning, you know, that, and Sissy and Bella and Gloria and all of them opposed it. And I feel that what's happening is that, thank God, the Texas women have their thing together, and there is a Chicana caucus in Houston, and there is a Chicana caucus in San Antonio. But I am concerned here in California that there's so few of us participating and that they're doing absolutely nothing about it, or that the national organization is doing nothing about it. I'm very concerned. In other words, we're going to get back down to tokenism. I like to belong to them. Mm-hmm. I just would like to see them go out and get more of the women involved. I can remember one woman saying, well, you know, if you get too many Mexican-American women into our group, it causes friction because pretty soon they're pulling their own. But you see, that's what politics is about. You know, it's kind of everybody manipulating to try to someday become the president of this organization or something like that, you know. And, I was very shocked that she should make such a statement as that.
Did you perceive Betty Friedan as one of the leaders there?
Wow! let me tell you, I met Betty at the first meeting, you know, in Washington, before I had never read The Feminine Mystique, and everybody kept telling me, Feminine Mystique, you know, and I'd say, what's that? And they'd say, you belong to the women's group, you never read this book? And I said, no. And then when I got to the convention, this is Betty Friedan, you know, and here's this woman that looks sort of heavy-like with a long dress and long hair, you know, and standing up on the floor and sort of bickering back and forth with Gloria. You know, over any time Gloria wanted to pass something, she'd stand up and oppose her.
Which meeting was this?
In Washington, just before the convention. And it was kind of a thing going on because here was the mother of the feminist movement, Betty Friedan, and, you know, like, here was the adult, the youth of the mm-hmm. women's movement, you know, there. And I kept saying, Jiminy, you know. One is, and it was sort of a thing like, you know, she was getting older and people were following Gloria. And that Betty was having a hard time keeping, you know, people backing her. But she had, you know, women that agreed with her. And I'd say they were the older women that were, you know, following her. And it was the younger ones that were following Gloria.
Was she in the spotlight in Miami?
No, she wasn't. She was there, but no, she wasn't.
Did she have much to say?
She tried several times to say him, but she no one seemed to, you know, listen.
Are you familiar with Liz Carpenter?
Yeah, I went to Liz Carpenter's home while I was in Washington. Very nice, outspoken woman, aggressive. She knows what she wants whenever she goes for it. Like, I guess she was for Humphrey. Mm-hmm. She was being in her house trying to sell me on, you know, why Humphrey should be, you know, president. She's a very aggressive woman, but does it in a completely different manner than Sissy or Bella. I'd say that she's kind of more like a Gloria Steinem method of, you know, dealing with people. Very quick to respond to questions. Mm-hmm. Knowledgeable. And she does have a lot of influence. And she's helped the caucus tremendously, you know, get money and finances. And
was she vocal at the caucus
meetings? Yes, she was. At all of them. Very vocal.